Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Dan Rinaldi and Rick Johnson from The Tabs. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is June 1st, 2013, and I'm talking with two members of The Tabs, Dan Rinaldi and Rick Johnson. We always start these interviews by asking the same questions. Please state your full name, your date of birth, and your hometown, please.
My name is Dan Rinaldi. I was born 5-1-45 in Minneapolis.
Okay, Rick?
Rick Johnson, July 15th, 1947. St. Paul, Minnesota is where I arrived.
What high school did you attend, and what year did you graduate?
Richfield High.
What year?
1963.
Okay.
And I must add, I'm sorry, that I had run away to Florida with a friend. We made it to Jacksonville, Florida, before the cops got us.
Really?
But I had gotten my mail, and I had straight F's. And I really didn't want to see my parents. So the cops caught us down there, sent me back home. My parents talked to all my teachers, and the teachers said, well, if he writes this stuff down, he'll graduate. So my parents wrote it down for me. The only classes I was good at are the shop classes. Mm. But I really didn't graduate. But Richfield High School, 1963.
Rick?
I don't have that good a story to tell. I mean, I just went to North St. Paul High School, graduated in 1965. Boring.
I remember when you told me that you went to Florida.
Yeah. Dan, when did you get your first guitar and start playing that guitar?
I think it was in ninth grade. My grandma bought me a big silver tone hollow body guitar with the two F holes in it. And that was my first one. I took lessons for about 2 weeks, and I didn't like what the teacher was teaching me, so I just learned on my own.
Okay. And Rick, do you recall when you got your first drum kit?
Yes, I do, Tom. my parents bought me a old Parade bass drum and an old snare drum, probably from the 20s. And I had a conga drum, so I used that as a tom-tom. And then my dad was a kind of a woodworker, so I used a saw blade for a cymbal. And so that was my first drum set. And then after that, I was a paper boy, and I earned enough money to buy my own drum set. And then I had a Ludwig Gold Sparkle kit.
I think you got something with that saw blade, though. That's cool.
Rick, do you recall where you purchased the Ludwig set from?
Yeah, it was Growth Music, which was at that time, on Marquette off 10th. And that was where I got my first drum set. I think it was about $400 or something like that.
That was probably a lot of money for the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rick, I think you were in a band prior to Dan. What band were you playing with in high school?
There was a band that I played with two other guys. We were called the Undantes, and it was just a three-piece band. And that was the fact that was the first band that I played in where I actually made money. We played a place over on Snelling. And we made $20, so we got about $3 a piece.
What was the name of that band again?
The Undantes.
And what's the meaning of that name?
You know who came up with that name? Me. I am the genius that came up with that name. It's a play on Dante, which is a
Dante's
tempo,
Inferno.
We spelled it Andontay, I think. Yeah. But anyway, so that would be I played in that band in high school, but then I got in a band called the Sandmen, played with them until the Tabs.
Now, my understanding from talking with Timothy D. Curry is that in the summer of 65, Timothy wanted to put a band together along with Bill Strandloff and Preston Bowen. They were all students at Alexander
Ramsey Senior High School from the class of 64 in Roseville, Minnesota. And Timothy D. Kerr was acting as the manager. Bill Strandloff played guitar and Preston was on bass guitar. Which one of you came in next? Dan, you came in next?
Yes. Yes.
What Dynamic was, Danny came next.
Dan, tell us the story about how you got to be a member of the Tabs.
Well, I had long hair, and Bill had long hair. I was at a dance, and this guy comes up to me.
Where was the dance?
In Bloomington, Marion Ballroom. And they had all the best bands in the city playing there. And I would go there and irritate people with my long hair. It was so much fun. And this guy comes up to me and says, "You play guitar?" And I said, "Yes." He says, he brought me to the bathroom. He says, "No, stay here." And I thought he was going to bring me some gay guy or something. But he went and got Bill. And Bill wanted to start a band. And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." And that's how I got with Bill.
And the guy you are talking about was Timothy D. Kerr.
Yes.
So you are invited to go over and practice with the guys?
Ah, I'm very excited. It's something I had dreamed about.
This is your first band?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And I just thought I was on top of the world, so.
All right. So then they need a drummer. Rick, how do you get invited to join the Tabs?
I knew Bill from Keith Zeller and the Starliners. I used to see them playing around at the White Bear Lake Armory, and particularly the Lion's Den. So I ran into Bill. He needed a drummer. I think I might have sat in with Keith Zeller or something because he heard me play. Or, no, he heard me play with the Sandman because the Sandman played at the Lion's Den. That was it. And then he asked me if I wanted to join his band. And I thought that he was starting a band. And I thought, oh, that's a step up for me. Anything's a step up from the Sandman. So I says, yeah. And then went over to his house and met Dirty Dan and Mr. Bowen. The rest is history, as they say.
Just for the record, Rick, where was the Lion's Den located?
Well, at that time it was called Gladstone, but it's now part of Maplewood, and it's on Frost Avenue and Peyton Place. Oh, yes, Peyton Place.
Okay, so you go over to practice. Do you recall the first time you went to practice, and where was it?
Gee, I think it was at Bill's, although it might have been at Preston's.
Yeah, either one.
Because I know we practice at both places. But it clicked pretty good, I thought. I was happy with the way it was going. Yeah.
When the band gets started practicing, what kind of material do they do at the time?
Well, as I recall, it was, Bill was really into the Byrds. We met the Byrds. Well, that's another story. But Bob Dylan. Preston liked the Rolling Stones, so we did a lot of Rolling Stones material. Well, we did a lot of Beatles material because Bill liked the Beatles. And actually, we all liked the Beatles, really, huh?
He loved the harmony.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Strandloff liked harmony vocals?
Yeah, he was a real harmony guy. He wanted, a lot of harmony.
I think that's why he quit the Litter.
Okay.
That could be. That makes sense.
Now,
because I think he was more of a harmony guy than guitar guy, really.
Now, Timothy D. Kerr came up with the name, I believe, the Tabs. And what do the initials stand for? T-A-B-S.
Tim and Bill Strandloff.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
I'm making it up.
No, but I think it makes sense.
All right, so just for the record here, Rick, who's in the original version of the Tabs, and who's playing what, and who's singing?
Well, the main guy in the band was Rick Johnson, and he played drums. And, you know, as I listened to that CD there, he didn't play too bad.
You were good.
And then there was Bill Strandloff. He was lead guitar. And then there was Dan Rinaldi, played rhythm guitar.
Yay!
And then Preston Bone played his Rickenbacker bass.
And who was doing the vocals?
Everybody did. But mainly it was Bill and Preston, I would say. And then Dan came second. And, of course, I came up the rear.
No, you did more than I did.
Really?
Well, okay, we all sang, which was kind of cool.
Dan, do you recall the very first job the Tabs played in public?
Bill talked to the owner of the bar, and the bar owner said he would let us play during the day for a couple hours, see how we did. And we went there, and we weren't even, well, I was old enough to be in there, but the other guys weren't. But, you know, he let us set up and play for a couple hours.
You said this is during the day?
Yes.
Not at night?
Right.
Was anybody there?
One guy. And he walked out giving me a dirty look, so I think we did pretty good.
We got a lot of dirty looks in those days.
Exactly.
Would it be true to say that the Tabs were the first band in the Twin Cities to have long hair?
We were.
To that extent, yeah, I think so.
And the two members with the longest hair would have been?
Bill Stratloff.
And Dan Renault.
Did that create any problems?
No. I didn't think so.
Well, when they started dating, it did. But
no.
Dan, did you get any flack from having long hair?
Tons. I lived off it. It was just wonderful.
You liked it?
I just hated it. Couldn't wait to wake up the next day and go out there and have people throw beer cans at me. And oh, it was great. I loved it.
So you weren't afraid of a little confrontation?
I called everybody out. Nobody, I mean nobody, even if they had 20 people in back of them, ever stood up to me. I was freaky back then.
So
I scared myself thinking about it.
You're scaring me right now.
Sorry.
Was Stratloff the same way?
I don't think he enjoyed it the way I did. He just wanted to be, like he thought, you know, having long hair, English guys. And I just thought a totally different way.
Was the British invasion a big influence on the local bands in 65?
Totally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
The Beatles were big.
Yeah.
Next Elvis.
Yeah.
Did you guys wear any special stage outfits when you performed or not?
Kind of.
The grungier, the better.
No.
I think we would dress different than with suits, which was the trend back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We never wore the same. We weren't an outfit type band.
Okay.
We were just out there.
So, Dan, when the band first goes out and plays in public, what kind of guitar do you have at this point and what kind of amp?
I would guess I had a Dan Electro, and I didn't realize what a gem I had.
Yeah.
I used to take a hacksaw to it, a shotgun, a .22, hammer, and the thing still played. And I finally broke it one night on stage, and the pickups went flying into the audience, and these two guys were nice enough to bring back the pickups and say, "You might want these," and I said, "Thank you very much."
What kind of amp did you use?
I think Bill had us all get dual Schulmans with the 100-watt head.
And as far as Bill Stratloff, what guitar was he playing, Rick, you know?
Gee, I think that was a hollow body 335.
Okay.
Could have been.
Dan?
Also, we had 12-string Rickenbackers for the Birds songs.
And Preston Bowen, do you know what kind of bass he played?
Nope.
I think he had a Hofner. Or it might either that or a Rickenbacker.
So after your first job at the bar and things didn't go too well.
Well, they went fine. I didn't say that.
At some point early in the career of the Tabs, two gentlemen pay you a visit from the Dick Blonigan Agency. Do you recall when they came out to check you guys out?
All of a sudden they were there. It's like they came out of the mist, and there they were.
Exactly.
Dick and Canute. Canute and Dick.
They were just all of a sudden there,
I think,
booking us.
Yeah, I think it was like they got hooked up through Bill. Bill and Tim, and all of a sudden they were there getting us these jobs up north.
And where did they get you jobs at this point?
We played up in Hibbing. That was our first job up north when we went to Hibbing. That's when we ran out of gas coming into town. And then we played Eveleth and Floodwood and Virginia, Cloquet,
Bemidji,
Brainerd. We were northern guys. We never got to go south.
Were these ballrooms or
armories? the wonderful, acoustically perfect armories.
Of course, you're referring to the fact that armories generally have concrete floors, walls, and ceilings.
Yeah,
they actually have nice reverb. I mean,
lots of reverb.
So it produced a nice echo for the band.
Yeah.
How did the band go over out of town with the kids up north?
We always got booked back.
Yeah, we got. I thought we went over really well. Got women, which was very important.
We used to have cops kind of escort us out of town once in a while, but we did pretty
good. Do you remember the time up in Hibbing? Can I tell it a story?
Yeah.
Yes.
We were in this hotel. It was the Hibbing Hotel, and we played this job, and then we got these women that belonged to a local motorcycle gang. And these guys, it was like right out of The Wild One with the big Harleys and the Indians and stuff. And they had the black leather jackets and all that stuff. And they were pissed that we had a couple of their women.
Yeah.
And so they were circling around the hotel with their motorcycles. So we sent the girls out the front door to talk to him and distract him, and we went out the back door and scooted down the highway at 40 miles an hour plus in that Volkswagen Microbus. Yeah. Do you recall that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Now, before you had the Volkswagen Microbus, you had another band vehicle, correct?
Oh, yes. We had Preston's dad had a pickup truck with a homemade built-in
topper.
Yeah, topper, yeah.
How'd that work out?
Oh, it was great. They were great. Because I think Preston and Bill rode in the front. Dan and Rick rode in the back. That was the priorities in the band.
We had a time together.
Yeah.
I understand.
And not in a bad way. I mean, we had fun.
Do you remember when we got up to Hibbing that first time? We were sitting we stayed in like a hotel. It cost like $2 a night or something like that. And these ladies came up to us and says, "Oh, are you from the local wrestling show?" That's I think here we are. We're little skinny little guys. We're going to be wrestlers. Yeah. But we had the long hair. It's like Tiny Mills was one of the wrestlers back in those days. The wrestlers had the long hair.
I understand you performed at the Purple Peanut in Bemidji.
That was cool.
Does that bring back any memories?
That was a good job, I remember.
Well, I remember, I think I mentioned this earlier, it was 36 below in Minneapolis then. And so we had to go up there. By the time we got to Bemidji, it was 46 below. Now, this isn't wind chill or nothing. This is straight below zero. This is the real weather. And we went up in a 58 Chevy convertible.
Yep.
And pulling a trailer, the car didn't have any heater, and the back window was out. And we had some girls along to kind of warm things up a little bit. But along the route up to Bemidji, we got a flat tire, and we couldn't get into the trunk because it was frozen. But there was another car with us that was following us. Anyway, they had an acetylene torch, you know, one of these little portable torches. So we heated up the lock so we got in there and got the tire changed, and on we are. By the time we got to Bemidji, I mean, I was so cold. We played a 4-hour job. It wasn't until the last set that my hands started to warm up where they were actually, I could feel the drumsticks.
So the VW microbus came after the pickup. Rick, what year was that microbus?
You know, I think I said 57. It might have been 58, but it was either 57 or 58. Volkswagen Microbus. It was red and white.
What did it top out at on the freeways?
I think probably maybe 50.
55. Downhill.
Downhill. With the wind.
Did you ever have to get out and push it up a hill? Or?
No.
Or that was the pickup, right? We have a
photo. That was the pickup when we ran out of gas coming into Hibbing. We had to push it about a mile, I think.
Okay. When the Blonigan agency was booking you guys up north, did you do repeat jobs at some of these armories over time?
We were repeaters, yes, we did.
Did you develop a fan base up there, or?
You know, I think we did. I mean, most definitely.
Yeah. You would notice the same people up?
And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did you notice more and more people showing up as you played?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I would say.
Okay.
I remember it was kind of handy to carry a revolver with you.
I got a story on that. Bill and I were in downtown St. Paul, and the Birds had just played up in Duluth, and they were run out of town.
Really?
It was McGuinn and Crosby, and that's the only guys I can remember that were they were in like a limo, and so we were talking to him and he's saying, "Well, we're going up to Hibbing to play." Oh, you don't want to go up there, man. And then he says, "What do you mean?" We played up in Duluth and they ran us out of town, and so we were really excited about going up to Hibbing. But anyway, that's our little encounter with the Birds.
I'm kind of curious as to what a typical day would be like. Let's say you have a job up north somewhere. Do you get there a day ahead of the event, or do you drive up during that day, or how would that work if you had a job up north? What would your schedule be like for that date?
My understanding is we just got there on the day, we'd leave the day that we did the gig, and then I do remember us staying in a hotel in Hibbing. I don't know why that was. Maybe because we were going on to another town up there or something. But I remember Dan and I roomed in one room at this flop house.
Did you do sound checks before the shows at all or not?
I guess so. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, I work with a guy now. We spend a half hour doing sound checks.
Did the Tabs even have a sound man? And
No.
So you did it all yourself?
Yeah.
From the stage?
Right.
Do you recall what kind of pay you would get for these jobs?
Yes, I do. We got, the band got paid $100.
For the whole band?
For the whole band. And you know, there's four of us, so that leaves $25 a piece. And then 10% did have to go to Blonigan.
I'm curious as to which band member sang lead vocals on which songs. Let's start with Bill Strandloff. Rick, do you recall what songs or some of the songs Bill Strandloff would sing lead vocals on?
Yeah, I think you've got to Hide Your Love Away.
By the Beatles?
Beatles, yeah. We used to do 8 days a week. And
another Beatles song?
Another Beatles song. He sang on that. I remember, it's funny because I remember these by the drum parts, not by the songs. Roll Over Beethoven, yeah, that was probably Bill. Well Respected, oh, that's not the Beatles, sorry, I went down to the Kinks.
So in addition to the Beatles songs, what other groups did Bill sing lead on?
Well, as I look down the list here, there's the Kinks, and I remember doing Well Respected Man.
Do you recall which songs by the Yardbirds Bill sang?
Go ahead. He sang lead on the Yardbird stuff.
Okay, so Bill did a lot of the British Invasion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bill was totally into the British Invasion.
Okay.
And in fact, I was surprised that he would do any blues tunes. He did it for, I think, my benefit.
Yes.
He was totally British and Dylan and Birds.
Okay, and how about Preston Bowen on lead vocals?
I remember him singing The Last Time. This could be the last time.
That's the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, Rolling Stones. Go ahead. Oh, Playing with Fire. I remember him singing that.
Play with Fire by the Rolling Stones again.
Round and Round. I remember that. It's All Over Now. Yeah, he did that. Yeah. He was a stoner. He was really into the Rolling Stones. So.
Painted Black.
I don't remember us doing Painted Black.
Dan, you recall that?
Yes.
Painted Black.
Okay.
Okay. And how about
I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Oh, Satisfaction.
I remember singing that.
Big hit.
I just remembered one. He did Jimmy Reed's Big Boss Man.
All right. Now let's switch over to Dan Rinaldi and find out.
Yay!
Go, Dan. Give it to him, Dan.
Which songs Mr. Rinaldi sang lead
vocals on? I'll sing every one of them right now for you right here.
Dan, what songs did you sing lead on?
John Hardy. It's kind of a folk song, different one for a rock band to do. And I had these high English boots that came up to my knee, so I did Nancy Sinatra, These Boots Are Made for Walking, Mitch Ryder, and the Detroit Wheels. I did Jenny Take a Ride. And Paul Revere and the Raiders. I did Just Like Me, Kicks.
And let's see, one more of the Supremes.
Come See About Me.
Now we'll check in with Rick and see which songs Rick sang lead vocals on.
Oh, let's look at that.
May I?
Yeah.
Inject this. Sure. Rick brought a different style to the band. He had his own likes, and it brought a different song list to the band, which was greatly appreciated.
Okay, Rick, what songs did you do lead vocals on?
Well, I have a little commentary here that I'd like to throw in. I was really into blues music, the old blues guys, Jimmy Reed, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Lead Belly. I mean, all these guys. Big Bill Brunsey, Lightnin' Hopkins. And so that was the mindset that I brought to the band. I wasn't much into, I hate to say this, but I'll say it anyway because that's the kind of guy I am. I didn't like the Rolling Stones at all because I thought they just destroyed all these good blues songs that they tried to do.
Yeah.
And when I was in the Taps, I was not a Beatle fan. I was not a Dylan fan. I was not a Birds fan. I have since, acquired a taste for that. But at the time, that's where I was at when I came in the band. So I did, and I was so surprised that Bill was willing to do any of that stuff.
Right.
That's kudos to Bill, I'm getting kind of a nostalgic feeling here about Bill, to tell you the truth. But anyway, after talking about all these blues songs, and I was saying, well, I did Blue Moon, which an Elvis version where he sang in this falsetto. And I remember doing that. We were down at the Roaring Twenties in Minneapolis, and we did that. And it didn't go over very well. Most of my songs didn't go over very well. But anyway.
Now, was that the same song that the Marcells had a hit with?
Yeah. I mean, it's that Blue Moon. It was done totally different, though, the way Elvis did it. It actually is a beautiful song, the way he does it, I think. But anyway, in those days, I had a falsetto, and now I don't have anything. But I did Howlin' Wolf. And we did You Got Down Here, You'll Be Mine, which we did, and Spoonful. And there was another one, too, but I get confused on it, but I think there's another Howlin' Wolf that we did. I love the Howlin' Wolf. I still do. So
did you say Spoonful?
Spoonful, yeah. Okay. We did that. Could be a spoonful. Of that. And then what was so funny is I even tried to sing like the Howlin' Wolf, Could be a spoonful of diamond. When you're young, you think you can do all this stuff.
Nobody knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was way ahead of everybody.
But anyway, then we did this great blues song by Moby Grape called Never. And I, the first time we did that was that down at the Roaring Twenties, I remember. And I thought that was, because they had this really great bass player, singer, Bob Mosley. He was such a good singer. Anyway, and then Louisiana Blues by Muddy Waters. We did that. And I don't think anybody did that song back then. I mean, they do the usual I Just Want to Make Love to You, Muddy Waters thing or something like that. But nobody was just doing Louisiana Blues. But the Taps.
It was you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of curious. These songs weren't really being played on the local radio, I would assume.
No, blues songs. No, in fact, none of these songs were popular, except for the only thing that was a hit was the Blue Moon, and even that wasn't—I don't even think was a hit for Elvis Presley. It was just on one of his albums, and so I kind of picked out stuff that was nobody knew about.
And how did you find these songs originally?
Well, I was an avid listener, and
through records.
Oh yeah.
It was a whole new feel to the band from the British stuff, so it was a nice song list.
Yeah. I mean, as I look back now in retrospect, I mean, it was totally different from what everybody else in the band was doing.
So, with the addition of the blues songs, the band really had a nice variety of music.
And we were one of the top 40 bands back then.